It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, welcome to the next episode of the Challenger 2 podcast. Once again, joined by my friend Jakub, and we're going to just talk about the four events that happened this week. Then we're going to talk about the two events that are going to happen. I'm at one of them, but that's going to be a little while later. Where do you want to start, Jakub? I guess there was one bigger event than the others, but if you want to start someplace else, it's fine by me.
I think we should start with the biggest one, and that was Koblenz, where I got my point that...
That's why you want to start in Koblenz.
Of course. Roman Safiulin beating Vasek Pospisil 6-2-7-5 in the final. It wasn't really looking like that was going to happen in the final, though, because their roads were very different. Safiulin went three sets every single time. He was, I think, struggling against players we don't usually see him struggle against. So he started by dropping a set to Blancano, winning 6-1 in the third, went all the way to a third set tiebreak with Escoffier and was actually down 3-love in the third set there. Then beat Vatutin 6-3, 1-6, 6-2, weird match, down a set again to Collignon in the semis. But when he gets to the final, he wins them. He's never lost a challenger final, 4-0, up 18 spots, number 82, new career high ranking. What did you think of Roman Safiulin this week?
Yeah, I'm kind of glad he won in two, not in three, because if he won in three, I was going to try to see when that last happened, when someone won a challenger winning all matches in deciding sets. And that would have been some very tedious manual research, which I was not excited about with how tired I was today. And he did it in two. As you said, I mean, at some point, I was honestly very surprised that no one on Twitter like was screaming at me for constantly talking about the slow courts in Koblenz, because I feel like I was mentioning them a lot. But, you know, that's the reality. I think they really impacted a lot of the results here and potentially also the matches that Safiulin had at the beginning. I mean, against Blancano, there were, I think, 13 breaks in 28 service games, which is just insane on an indoor hard court because it's barely an indoor hard court. Did it speed up throughout the week? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe you have a take on this, because it certainly seemed like that in the last few matches, but maybe it was just Safiulin and Pospisil making them play and, you know, look faster than, I don't know, someone like Kolaš or Miller could.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I only caught matches early in the week. I was okay. More focused on Davis Cup over the weekend. But yeah, they looked very slow to me. In Jean Collage as well, in Safiulin Blancano, that first set, it felt like a weirdly like a slog. it was weird to see. But yeah, I mean, did they speed up by the end? Did they get more used to it as they went on? I'm not sure what happened there.
Me neither. Obviously, Safiulin Pospisil, you know, it's going to look faster than, I don't know, Kolaš Miller, which was a match that we had this week. But yeah, Safiulin just dealt with it well, I guess. He had that one match against Escoffier when he was 0-3 down. But other than that, all the deciders were short, quick, very, very comprehensive for him. And yeah, in the final, he was definitely the better player. Pospisil probably had his worst performance of the week, but it's not something that Safiulin will care about. And I think, as we mentioned maybe last week, or maybe I was just putting it in some tweet, Marseille semifinal points, Safiulin was going to defend them soon. Now he basically did that and then some with the 100 points from Koblenz. So that's excellent for him and should keep him in the top 100 for a little while longer.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that was key maybe for him mentally as well, that he dominated three of these four matches by the end of them. So it didn't feel like battle after battle after battle. He just had sort of two quite slow starts. But yeah, he finished strong in all of them. I mean, he won all of his matches. So yeah, that's what happens when you're the champion. for Vasek Pospisil, it was his 18th challenger final, 11-7 in those finals. And he did not drop a single set until this final. He was actually the bookies' favorite as well. So on this run, he beat Emilio Navas 7-5, 6-2, then Rosenkrantz, two tiebreaks, beat Wessels 6-4, 6-2, did not give any chances to Collage at all, 6-1, 6-3 in those semis. He moved up 13 spots, number 100. What did you think of Pospisil this week?
I think he probably had a bit of a... He definitely had a bit of a different route than Safiulin. More powerful players, especially in the first three matches, of course, not against Collage. I thought he was probably the better player coming into the final. He seemed to be dealing with these slow courts better. I think he had a lot of time to set up for the forehand. You know, the serve was still bringing him 3 points, which is the same for Safiulin pretty much. I guess, you know, recently he has a lot of these bad days at the office. Usually it just coincides with him not really being able to move his feet that well. And today I thought his footwork was just so sloppy to the forehand corner. He was never a great mover, but I just think that's the part of this game that's really declined. And on some days he can really struggle to get going in that department. And the final was just another one of these for me. He, of course, had that brief moment when Safiulin led him back in the second set. He had a couple of set points and a play on one of them for sure. But, he wasted that. But yeah, definitely, with the way he played in the final, he did not deserve to win it.
Yeah, we can move on to our semifinalists, starting with Zdeněk Collage, who makes his first Challenger semifinal appearance since Barletta in April last year. It has been a struggle for him since Roland Garros. I feel like we both tweeted about this throughout this week. On this run, he beat Bellier in straight sets, then took out top seed and your pick, Zhijian Zhang, 6-3 in the third, outlasted Alexander Muller in the third set tiebreak. What did you think of Collage this week? Do you feel like he's turned the corner, or was it more of a luckier run this week?
You know, the combination of slow indoor, I think, is amazing for him. We could definitely see how much more comfortable he was handling Zhang's or Bellier's power. Especially Zhang was such a fun match. I mean, in 34 consecutive points on serves, then Collage won 32. That must be a first for him. I mean, I can't imagine this not being a record for the guy. We talked about it last time that, well, we are fans of the player, I mean, of the person, Zdeněk Collage, but not necessarily of what he shows on the court. And yeah, his style is limited, but of course, I actually started thinking about this a couple of days ago. Like, does he belong at the challenger level, or is it more that I got used to seeing him there? But anyway, you know, yeah, this is a big run for him. Now he's going to stay afloat until Roland Garros, probably, where he defends 70 points. So he needs to get some more results before then. A little bit of a shame he was crushed in the semis like that. I thought on that slow court he might have a shot again at Vasek, but...
Yeah, I mean, maybe he did speed up with wear as the week went on. Who knows? Then we had Rafael Collignon making the semifinals here, saving a match point in the first round over Gijs Brouwer in a 5-7, 7-6, 6-3 win, taking out Andre Laxon in the straight sets and getting a retirement for Maxime Martelet after 7 games. His second Challenger semifinal this season already, and he breaks the top 250 as he goes up to number 236 in the rankings. What did you think of Collignon? Pretty impressive run this week.
Yeah, I mean, again, slow indoor court, very good for him. But, you know, it's a second Challenger semifinal of the year for him. Belgian tennis on the rise, right? I mean, Onclin, Delors, Collignon, it seems like all of these guys will be playing Challenger Tour regularly pretty soon. And, of course, Bergs is way higher.
They choked at Davis Cup tie away, but yes, overall true. On the rise.
But that was actually, you know, that was Bergs, that was Goffin, and that was Gilevliegen. So neither of these challenger guys really took place in it. Neither of these took part in it. Great run for him for sure. It's just a shame that he couldn't really touch Safiulin in the latter two sets, because after the first it certainly felt like maybe he's going to be able to do it.
Is there anybody else you want to talk about from the singles in Copland?
Probably not. Patutin had a fantastic run, by the way, and that's also another impact of these courts for sure. The way he was hitting his backhand, you know, the way it also mitigates the advantage of serve, you know, the guys like Collage, Patutin, these guys who don't really serve like at all, they don't have any advantage because of their serve. They thrived here, and that's why I kept talking about these slow courts. Sorry if that irritated someone.
In the doubles, we had Fallet and Yebens win the title over Aceric and Molchanov. We can move over to Tenerife, where I came close to getting point. Not that close, but my game did make it to the final. Matteo Arnaldi won the title over Raul Brancaccio, 6-1, 6-2 for his second challenger title. First one was a 50, I think. So the first yes. one that's of a 75 or higher category. On this round, he beat Genesi in three sets, Mochizuki in three sets as well. Krutich and Alvarez Varona were his win in straight sets. Finished strong, only dropping three games in the final. He's now at number 110 in the rankings, 37 points away from the top 100 debut. What did you think about Arnaldi this week?
Yeah, finished strong, I think, even since the quarterfinals onwards. Definitely a bit shaky in the first two rounds, but from the quarters onwards, he was amazing. Just insane defense against Alvarez Varona and Krutek, who both seemed to be playing extremely well. And Brancaccio just didn't really push him in the final, maybe because of the blister on his hand or whatever he had the medical timeout on. But certainly a very strong run. I think really we are arriving at a point where, I mean, Arnaldi's top 100 is probably secured, right? He's going to get these results anyway. But I think another question that actually makes a little sense now is whether even whether clay courts are even better for him than hard now. And I guess we'll see in the spring, but, you know, he's certainly improved so much when it comes to playing on these sort of surfaces. Not a fluke in Saint-Tropez last year, not a fluke at the Next Gen Finals. And yeah, from the quarterfinals onwards, he was really fantastic. So,
yeah. As for Brancaccio, it was his third challenger final. Document starting slow. He got bageled in his first set in Tenerife by Milojevic, but turned that match around to win 6-2 in the third. Eliminated Daniel Cox in straight sets, beat Carlos Tabernier 6-3, 6-7, 6-love, and then got a walkover from Lloyd Harris in the semis to make it to the final. Up 23 spots, number 124 now, 96 points away from top 100. Do you feel like we have another Italian in the top 100 debut coming up soon here?
Very possible. I mean, he basically isn't defending much until like June, July. He is defending some results along the way.
Yeah, it's 7 points here, 7 points there.
Exactly.
For the most part.
So, yeah, I think so. I don't think it will be the most deserved top 100 debut, frankly. A lot of his points come from weaker events. Numea title. Final here, by the way, this was probably like the worst, really, you know, one. How do you even get to a hardcore challenger final beating Milojevic, Cox and Tabernier? You know, Milojevic with how much, how out of form he's been, also not really able to play on hardcore. Tabernier the same. And Cox, yeah, it really would have been a very weak title run if he did it. The final still grants him 50 points, right? So, yeah, he is actually in a very good position to make it now. Do I think he is a top 100 player? You know, he's definitely done enough to deserve the ranking spot that he is at right now. Since June, he's been just, you know, fabulous. A friend of mine made a comparison of Brancaccio to Kachin, and I think in a lot of ways it makes sense. Brancaccio has a bigger forehand, of course. Kachin serves better, but they're both like very, very basic aggressive baseliners, but they are very, very good at what they want to do on the court. They just know how to execute these simple patterns. And yeah, he has definitely put himself in contention and did extremely well at that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's as we talk about maximizing your talent, I feel like Brancaccio is very much, if he reaches the top 100, that is squeezing all, squeezing out what he can from what he has as a tennis player.
We had Franco Agamenone almost in the top 100 just a couple of months ago. And I'd say Brancaccio is probably significantly better than Agamenone in terms of just, you know, strict talent, even though it's hard to define, but, you know, potential. It wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world for sure, no.
All right, we can talk about our semi-finalists and some other players that I've highlighted here. Let's start with Lloyd Harris, who beat Ivan Gakhov 6-4, eliminated Passaro 7-5 in the third, took out Marcora as well in the quarters in straight sets to reach already his third challenger semi-final this season. He's 10-3 on challengers, up 20 spots now to number 155. What did you think of Lloyd Harris here?
Yeah, I mean, he was probably the best player in the field. We talked about it before the week started. He was my pick to win it, of course. Brancaccio was yours. And but he was not clean from the get-go. He had some sort of physical issues already in the Passaro match. I'm not even sure if maybe in the second set against Kakov. Of course, he was almost out to Passaro as well, 5-3 down in the third. I still think it was his tournament to lose, but given how he looked against Marcora especially, I didn't think he was beating Carnaldi or Krutik or Alvarez Varona for that matter anyway. So, but that's again due to him being weakened physically. Brancaccio, I thought he was probably going to get by anyway, but yeah, he ended up withdrawing before the semis.
Mm-hmm. And our other semifinalist was Nicolas Alvarez Varona. He entered as a wild card and really maximized that by beating Caruso, Peniston, and Moro Cañas in three sets. His third career challenger semifinal at 21 years old. What did you think of this run from Alvarez Varona?
Yeah, we've talked about him a few times as a player who, well, should not be ranked 290 and who has more game than, everything in his game basically makes sense. It's some intangibles that are hampering his progress a bit. So definitely a good run to start his 2023 campaign. He needs to play qualies in Tenerife 3 now, but I think he's playing Gutierrez in the opening round. And then who is he playing next? If he wins, Damas or Harrison, I guess that's Christian, right? So if he's really as good as I think he is, he should be making it through to the main draw.
Yeah. I mean, Christian Harrison, we'll mention here, he's coming off of a doubles title, so he probably has his confidence up high. But first, I also wanted to mention Moro Cañas, who made the quarterfinals here. He had a tough start in qualifying, 6-4 in the third, wins over Merida Aguilar and Lopez San Martin. But once he was in the main draw, he beat Maestrelli 7-5, 6-1, beat Misolic in straight sets as well for his second career challenger quarterfinal. What did you think of Moro Cañas here?
Yeah, I really like his game. I mean, he maybe doesn't have a ceiling as high as Alvarez Varona could, but anytime you watch him in these Spanish challengers, he's really holding his own, both on hard courts, on clay courts as well. He has a very nice grinding game for sure, pretty heavy ball. He is the favorite against Yun Chao Keta tomorrow, so maybe we're going to see him in another main draw. Would really love him to, to just make, top 250 appear in some Grand Slam qualies. He's probably, good enough to be in that ranking range at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And quick shout out to Yaroslav Demin, who made his debut here. In a pretty impressive loss to Passaro, was up 6-2, then lost 2-6, 6-3, 6-4. What did you think of Demin on his challenger debut?
Yeah, definitely didn't seem like he was as far from Passaro as it would seem. We kind of even laughed about Passaro losing to Demin, I think, in the previous episode, and it was very much a possibility. Of course, a lot of that was on Passaro totally losing his mind on hard courts sometimes. But Demin, yeah, pretty strong backhand. The serve is good for his age, of course. He does seem pretty, pretty basic, but he's 16 or whatever. No, he's 17, right? I don't know.
I think
17. Yeah, he's 17. Of course, he has a lot of time to make up for it. Yeah, one of the guys who have been I think he used the accelerator in both weeks in Tenerife now. So we're also gonna see him. And again, he draws a very tough Italian opponent because he's gonna play Brancaccio in the opening round. But maybe if the blister is still a problem, I don't think Demin has to lose that one, but we'll see.
All right. In the doubles, as I mentioned, Christian Harrison won the title, and it was alongside Shintaro Mochizuki. They beat the Italian pair of Gigante and Passaro in the final.
Yeah, the famous Gigante-Passaro pairing that we're now going to mention every single time someone snipes an opponent at the net with their serve. Thank you for delivering such a beautiful moment, Matteo and Francesco. That was probably like the best match point ever.
We can go over to Cleveland, where Alexander Kovacevic ruined our potential sort of streak of number two seeds, having a week of only number two seeds winning titles. And he did it by beating Yibing Wu in the final 3-6, 7-5, 7-6, his maiden challenger title. Lost the tight final to Yibing Wu, obviously, in Indianapolis in his first challenger final. This one, it was tough right from the start. The match against Rybakov, I watched it. It was one of my favorite matches of the week. And he did well to come out of that one. And it would be his only straight sets match of the week. The next one would be his only straight sets match of the week, as he beat Marchenko. Then beat Johnson in three straights as well. Defeated Emilio Gomez, obviously came back from a sit-down in the final. Up 41 spots to number 125, 99 points away from the top 100. What did you think of Kovacevic this week?
Yeah, the Australian Open loss to Taberner was like really underwhelming. You could really start thinking about whether Kovacevic is going somewhere this year. And then he does this, which I don't know if it's repeatable to be winning matches this way constantly, but he definitely has shown some progress in terms of, you know, the focus, the way he was able to play with the crowd as well from coming back from a set down in three consecutive matches. And especially the defense on the backhand corner against Wu, you know, the slice was probably the shot that won him the match, which has been a shot that we've been, you know, wanting Kovacevic to improve for a long while. It's seen some minor improvements. This time they felt pretty major in most of the matches. Against Johnson, by the way, he was down 0-2, I think, in the second and 1-4 in the third. So is it repeatable to be winning matches this way? Probably not. At least not on a very regular basis. But as you said, 99 points away from the top 100, and I'm also inclined to believe that there is a very big chance that he does it this year. And, you know, for him, it's absolutely key, I think, that he took this final, because another heartbreaking loss to Wu like that. And yeah, I think that would really set him behind, you know, that would be a big setback for him after that Indianapolis final that they played. And then to lose another one serving for the match, that would be, I think that could really hamper him for the next month or something. So yeah, for him, it's absolutely fantastic that he won it.
Yeah, I mean, between now and June is the biggest, I think, opportunity window. Yeah. He has a lot of sort of runs out of qualifying to the second round, since he was still playing challenger qualifying this time last year. But overall, it shouldn't add up to too much. And then obviously in June, he had the semifinals in Little Rock. But he should be breaking it at some point this season. All right, as for Yibing Wu, it was his fifth challenger final. He's 3-2 in those finals, all of them since June 2022. Continues to be a phenomenon.
Wasn't there one more final, 2017 Shanghai, which he won after the US Open boys singles title?
Yes, yeah, forgot that one there. But yeah, on this round, he beat Aiden Mayo 6-1, Love 6-6-4. Then to cut strong, Kirkheimer 7-6, 7-6, Kozlov 6-4, 6-1, Sandgren 6-3, 6-2. I really thought he was going to win this one and get us both a point, but he lost this final, but still breaks the top 100 at number 97 in the rankings, moving up 15 spots. What did you think of Yibing Wu this week? How high do you think he can actually go?
It's a tough question, because I think the game is clearly, you know, top 30 quality or something like that. I don't know if he's there mentally. I don't know if he's there tennis IQ wise. I had a bit of a detailed conversation about Wu with someone on my DMs a couple of days ago. And I remember really criticizing like the way he was selecting his shots and et cetera. And then thinking that it's probably only going to come into play against guys like Butet, the Australian Open, and, you know, something like that, that in the Kovacevic matchup, it makes very little difference. And then it actually turned out that Wu had a lot of issues in the third, just, you know, choosing after which balls to approach. Any weak approach was punished by Kovacevic, who suddenly has a fantastic defensive backhand, it turns out.
He was ripping that backhand pass break for 5-4. That was unbelievable. I love that.
He also hit an insane one in the last game against Gomez in the semis. So yeah, in that regard, definitely the best week of his career. Also, by the way, this is the first pro title for Kovacevic of any kind. He never won an ITF. Oh. he never won a doubles title. He never won a juniors title because he was like in 400 something in juniors. So yeah, basically this is the first title of Kovacevic's life, you know, after he turned 15, 16 or something like that. I'm assuming as a kid, he probably had some, you know, small random tournaments. But other than that, yeah, he was still awaiting. He only had one ITF final in 2019, which he lost to Sitsu Berbi. But anyway, yeah. Very tough start for Wu, as you said. Mayo Kirchheimer, they really pushed him. But after that, I think he was really just spot on against Sandgren, Kozlov. Of course, he has insane talent. I don't know if he is going to realize it. Then again, you know, a lot of his flaws can get sort of polished up with time. We've seen it with someone like Lehechka, who is now, by the way, you know, a top 20, top 15 prospect this year, probably. And that's like easily. And yeah, the guy basically with experience, he started doing everything on the tennis court better, including, you know, the ability to play matches, to understand what he needs to do on the court. So maybe we'll get there as well with some big stage experience against top guys. He gets a chance in Dallas soon. I think it's definitely more of a setback. It would have been more of a setback for Kovacevic than it is for Wu to lose this one, especially as he's now in the top 100 as well, which he did by winning against Sandgren. Of course, he was getting there regardless in the next few weeks, but you know, we still have to mention that.
Yeah, as for our semifinalists, we can start with Emilio Gomez, who beat Ezekiel Clark and then Pennington Jones before a big battle against Diallo that he was 7-5 in the third. Of course, was a setup on Kovacevic. What did you think of Gomez this week?
Yeah, I thought he was losing to Diallo, frankly. I even thought maybe Pennington Jones has a chance. But this Cleveland courts, they didn't really seem that fast. So I think that was pretty nice for Gomez, whom we've seen struggle in like Columbus or something like that. I mean, he still made the final in Columbus last year, but you could see that he's, you know, sort of just, he wasn't good enough shape to keep going, even though the courts didn't suit him. Here, he theoretically didn't have that sort of advantage after a pretty rough start to the year, but that's definitely a good round for him. And yeah, was very close to making it to a final. And I think if he made it to a final, he probably wouldn't beat Wu. So, you know, the Chinese can feel a little unlucky there.
Yeah, our other semifinalist was Tennis Sandgren, who started with a three-set battle against Elmar Ayupovic, winning in a third set tiebreaker, then took out Brandon Holt 6-2 in the third. Another three-set battle with Zachary Svajda, also a third-set tiebreaker, before eventually losing to Wu. What did you think of Sandgren this week?
Yeah, Sandgren won seven matches so far this year, and only one of them in straights. He's clearly very determined to take the scenic route, but you know, sometimes it's easy to forget after all these years of struggles for Sandgren that he's such an excellent ball striker as well. And yeah, sometimes you can just look at him and be amazed at how the guy hits the ball. Yeah, and that's what in his best moments he definitely does to me. Also, I didn't realize that he, you know, he had that very weird loss to Gengel in Nontaburi Part One, but in the next two events in Nontaburi, he lost to Artur Cazaux. So, you know, he's definitely in a bit better form than I think most people realize, and he was in the latter half of 2022 as well. So,
yeah, and over in the doubles with the top seeds, Galloway and Hach Verdugo defeat the second seeds, Gonzalez and Stalder. And we can go over to Bernie, where you got your point this time around. Rinki Hijikata defeating James Duckworth 6-3, 6-3 for his second challenger title, both of them in Australia. On this one, he didn't drop a single set, beating Takahashi, Ellis, McCabe, and Shimizu. Up 30 spots, number 119. His new career high ranking, only 83 points away from top 100, which I did not realize that he was going to rise this high. I think I sort of forgot that Bernie was a 75, not a 50 at one point during the week. And yeah, I think this really sets him up well for sort of main tour push, also with his doubles ranking. So yeah, what did you think of Hijikata this week though?
Yeah, this is probably the second top 100 debut already that I missed on my list, along with Skatov, But I think Skatov is way more of a given. Hijikata actually needs to perform outside of Australia. And in stronger events, you know, he's only sometimes been able to do that. And he is dropping a lot of points just from winning ITFs, making finals in ITFs. You know, it's not 50, it's not 75 ever, but it actually requires, you know, second rounds, quarterfinals to make, to even, you know, stick with that. So I don't know, maybe he's not that much of a lock yet. But, you know, this week he was fabulous. He played just like a guy who just won a Grand Slam men's doubles from out of nowhere, meaning that he was so confident, so full of belief in himself that, you know, basically he was oozing that. And you could see it in almost every match. Only McCabe took him, took more than four games in a set. And yeah, Rinki was just never really pushed this week. And against Duckworth, he was so impressive as well. So I'm definitely glad with this pick, although, well, I had this concern that maybe he's not going to be able to just jump right back into it after such a huge emotional high. He was able to, and we'll see how he does in the States now, because I think he's going to Delray and then Rome, Georgia.
Yeah. As for our finalist, James Duckworth, it was his 20th Challenger final, 12-8 in those finals. His first one was almost a decade ago in July 2013 in Lexington. On this run, though, it was more of a struggle at points. He started with a straight set win over Ochi, but that would be his only one, as he dropped sets to Jake Delaney, I think, because there's two Delaneys, right?
Yeah, it's Jake, yeah.
It was Jake. Then he beat Sekulic 7-5 in the third, beat Paul Mans in three sets as well. Didn't come close to winning the final, but moves up 26 spots to number 137. What did you think of Duckworth this time around?
Yeah, he was sort of struggling, but still winning. Of course, the win against Paul Mans is impressive. I wonder if Sekulic would have beaten him if not for that crazy thriller against Moria that he had in the second round. But, you know, we'll never know that. I was very shocked to see him losing a set to Jake Delaney, frankly. But yeah, the most impressive match of the week against Paul Mans, but he actually stood no chance in the final, which was kind of surprising to see.
Yeah. As for semifinalists, Mark Pullmans was one of them, beating Walken. Then his doubles partner, Max Purcell, 6-3 in the third, beat Adam Walton as well. And he returns to the top 300, I think 270-something with this run. What did you think of Pullmans here?
Yeah, he got out of that sick quarter that we are talking about with Bolt, Purcell, yeah. Pullmans. Good win over Walton as well. Walton has been showing some potential. And yeah, I did not see the semi against Duckworth. I thought Pullmans was probably a slight favorite coming into it. I suppose that must have been a big grind fest with how both guys play. But yeah, no clue how Duckworth won it. I mean, I have a clue in that sense that it's not shocking, but I don't have a clue since I didn't watch.
Our other semifinalist was Yuta Shimizu, beating Chazal, Skulkate, and Fancutt, all in straight sets. Any thoughts on him?
Yeah, I honestly, one thought that I had, and sort of you know, betting related, was that he was for some reason really respected by the bookmakers. Like, he was a huge favorite against Fancutt, for example, which turned out right, and he was actually like perceived to have a shot at Hijikata, which did not turn out okay. But I suppose that's because Rinki lost to him in Sydney last year. But that was, you know, coming off a title, so I think that was more explained by this. Yeah, Shimizu just has a pretty nasty lefty game to face, so. You know, he is unpleasant, but was he the weakest out of the four semifinalists? Oh yeah, and by a lot. But still a couple of great wins over Skulkate, even over Fancutt, who I think beat your pick Uchiyama as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And over in the doubles, it was Pullmans and Purcell winning the title, beating Luke Seville and Tristan Skulkate in the final. All right, match of the week, upset of the week, where would you like to start?
I think I'll start with Match. I remember we were disappointed last week with the lack of great matches, and this time there were actually plenty. One that definitely deserves to be considered, I think, is the final, Vukovacevic. I'm not going for that. I think the highest quality match I saw was Krutik-Royer in Tenerife, but I'm not going for that. I'm going to go for the drama of Sekulic-Moria. As a matter of fact, if not for the rain delays in Bernie, perhaps I wouldn't even get to watch it, but I did. It was insane. I still think Sekulic, you know, he keeps looking close to a breakthrough. Did he get it this week? Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell. He went toe-to-toe with Duckworth and beat Moria, so maybe he did. But yeah, it was just insane to see that that battle, that thriller, after he missed match points in the second set. Then the shoelace gate, by the way, which was crazy too. If this happened on the main tour, then Sekulic would have been another Stefanos Tsitsipas. His shoelaces kept breaking, and he had to ask the supervisor to get them new ones. There was one of these delays happened just before the match point. Before the match point, there was like a 5-minute delay.
That's insane.
Yeah. And Moria talked to him at the net about that. You could hear it on the screen. Moria is, you know, too kind to be nasty to him or anything, but he just said, you know, it's not fair. You should have a second pair of shoes or something like that. And Sekulic was like, what do you want me to do or something like that? But yeah, it was insane, really. It was definitely one of the crazier matches I've watched this year so far. And I'm choosing that for the drama, but the quality wasn't really poor at all. No, I think that the best match I've seen this week was Krutik Rojer.
Yeah, obviously I'm not a top level athlete. Like, I've never had shoelaces break in my life. Have you ever had a shoelace break?
No, I don't think so.
I've seen it happen
on the tennis court for some players. Yeah, but definitely not a few times. I think there must have been something wrong with his shoelaces, simply.
Mm.
Yeah. Like technical, you know, fault of the shoe, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they do go through a lot more shoes than we do.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But yeah. Yeah, for my match of the week, I will be going with Kovacevic over Yibing Wu. It wasn't as good as the Indianapolis final, but I thought it was still very high quality. Some beautiful shots there. Other contenders that I had were Kovacevic beating Rybakov. I also had Marchenko beating Kodat in there, and Kolaž beating Zhang, which is what I'm actually going with for my upset of the week as well.
Kolaž Zhang, that's probably a fair choice. I honestly did not choose one yet, but just quickly glancing at the odds, there's Funkat over Ochiyama, which was high, and I think, yeah, Vessels over Wang, Vatutin over Brody, that's weird to me. I think I might just follow you. I think Vatutin over Brody is the biggest score for the bookies, which is super, super weird to me on this slow court. But yeah, I think I also go for Zhang over Kolaž. Did not expect that at all. I actually thought Zizhen would like these cards. So yeah.
All right, we can move on to our previews. Just to check the state of play and the winner's pick, it is still the same when it comes to the difference, but we both added one apiece. So you were in the lead 6-4. Best I can do this week is tie, since we only have two events. But we will see how it goes. Let's start in Vilnius, which will be your stomping ground for the week. Very exciting. At the Vitas Gerulaitis Cup, which, by the way, I did some reading on Vitas Gerulaitis because I realized I didn't know that much about him, and that he represented the USA, and he was presumably of Lithuanian origin. I had no idea that he died so young and in such weird circumstances, where he died, I think he was 40 or so, and it was of carbon monoxide poisoning from his pool, which is
I had no idea either, but there's a big gallery commemorating him at the venue, of course, for this for this event, not for the Vilnius Open in October. I made some photos of it and we'll probably tweet it out tomorrow, but yeah, I also found out about the death earlier today. I also didn't know that he coached Sampras at the 1994 Italian Open in Rome.
What?
Which, Gullickson, I think, was working with Sampras at the time. Maybe it wasn't Gullickson, maybe it was someone else. But the coach of Sampras at the time took like a, you know, vacation or something, probably presuming that Sampras, that's not written on that board. That's my sort of guess, but probably presuming that Sampras is not doing much in Rome anyway. And and Gerulaitis coached him during that week, and Sampras won that event, of course. Yeah, I also wasn't really familiar with his story that much. I've heard a bit about, of course, I knew like more or less what he did on the court, that he was from, like, originally his family was from Lithuania. I knew that as well. I also heard a lot about him from the Polish legend Wojtek Fibak, who claimed a few times in interviews that he basically, Gerulaitis, whenever a draw came out, he was looking for Fibak's name and hoping that they won't be next to them because he was just crushing him. Their head-to-head is actually 8-all, I think. But there was a moment when Fibak beat him like 5 consecutive times. So, you know, it's a funny story. But anyway, this event is commemorating him. I also had no idea about the early death, and you know, I think I knew that he was dead, but I had no idea how early that was. And you're right, he was just 40.
Yeah, but we can go to the event now, and we have Dominic Stickhead as our top seed playing Joris Delour. Great first round right off
sorry.
The bat.
Just wanted to say the head-to-head is actually 4-9. And yet he claims that Gerulaitis was afraid of him. You know, maybe there was a brief moment, but I don't know.
He didn't want that heat. He didn't want that feedback heat.
Yeah, right.
At some point. But yes, Stricker Delour, very exciting first round match. The winner of that will face a qualifier. Then we have Locoli facing Kacper Zhuk. Sedarusic plays Cem Ilkel, who gets a wild card here. Very nice to see. Presumably some sort of exchange. With the Turkish Federation for one of their young talents that they have coming through. Yuri Rodionov is the third seed playing Michael Hertz. Winner will face Zdeněk Kolář or a qualifier. Heis Brauer plays Otto Virtanen. Winner of that will play Escofie or Edas Butfilas, one of those Lithuanian wildcards.
Escofie and Butfilas, by the way, played at the last Vilnius Challenger in the second round.
I felt like that's what happened. Yeah,
yep. Escofie played both Kaupas and Butfilas back then.
Yeah, Butfilas beat Kielan, I see, earlier this.
Yeah,
this season.
He won a 15K, and it was actually the same venue. It was the Vilnius Cup, and it was held at the SEB Arena. And he also played in the Davis Cup at the same venue this weekend. Berankis, Gaubas, and Butfilas, I think, played. Gaubas in a dead rubber. I'm not sure who played doubles, but definitely Berankis and Butfilas were the top two choices. Of course, it was against Pakistan, so, you know.
Yeah.
Pakistan not at home is just, abysmal.
Yeah, and rough situation for them, for sure. Struff is the fifth seed playing a qualifier, and then Laxon or Junhur. Denis Novak is the fourth seed playing Alexander Richard, and then Berankis or Celik Bilek. So Berankis, I assume, will be the main star of this event. I do wonder if he can make a run here potentially, but it's a tough section to try and get out of, I think, for him, second round and then potentially quarters. In the final section, we have Elias Imet, the second seed playing Vilius Gaubas. Winner of that will face Brody or Moraing. Vitkopshiva plays Evan Furness, and then one of two qualifiers. In that qualifying, we have some very interesting matchups and names. We have, I mean, so much so that they dedicated a full day to it. Zhukaev playing Gerasimov is I think, the pick of the lot. We also have Sachko Kirkin, Rosencrantz will play Purtsaladze. Masur could be an interesting qualifier if he beats Ferrari. Over in the doubles, we have Eserik Molchanov, who were just in the final last week, playing Kopshiva Pospisil. It's always, I think, interesting to see those, player coach out there together. We also have Cornea with Petros Tsitsipas. Butfilas plays with Ferrari on a wild card against Escofie again. He plays Escofie in doubles as well. Escofie team with Oklepo there. Zsombor Piros is playing doubles.
Yeah, he got injured at the Davis Cup and didn't play. Maroshan subbed in for him. And I suppose he's just playing double speed, you know, to sort of ease his way back into it. I mean, Zsombor Piros got injured, basically. That's all you need to know. Yeah. That happens 50,000 times a year. So I'm laughing, but it's actually, of course, you know, quite a sad occasion anytime it happens.
And he got injured in a win over Bonzi, which is the wild thing. Kiki Piros, actually, they face Richard and Stricker, which is an interesting team. We have Drzewiecki and Valkovin here as well. Gaubas teams up with Babelis against Raja and Sharan. Adnel de Weisborn play Kolar and Sitak. That would be whoever comes out of that could be a potential title contender.
Arnaud de Weisborn won the Vilnius Open in October. So
Nice. But going back to the singles, who are you picking for the title here?
Yeah, I will say though that yeah, as Jakub sort of mentioned, on Monday there's only the final round of qualifying, which I haven't seen happen in a challenger quite a long time.
And it is actually noted as starting on this the 7th.
Initially it said Monday start, but then they changed it. And uh-huh. I checked, you know, when they were selling tickets for the events, they had like a schedule of what happens when, and this wasn't the way it was intended in the schedule. So I'm not sure when they made the decision, maybe because of Davis Cup travel.
That's all I can think of.
That's, you know, some guys like Zhuk, for example, going from Japan, you know, they still could have scheduled him for Wednesday, right? Or Tuesday, even if it was the normal system. I don't know why, but you know, tomorrow is going to be a pretty quiet day for sure. Just 6 matches. Most of them, honestly, the qualifying draw is pretty weak compared to major, I think. But as you said, Zhukaev, Gerasimov, that's one that I definitely want to see. There's also, I think actually Putseladze, Rosenkrantz can be... surprisingly interesting. The Georgian was just firing huge forehands and serves today, which I guess gives him a chance against Rosenkrantz, who's very serve-oriented himself, of course. And yeah, as you said, Sachko, Masur, Yevseyev, these are very dangerous qualifiers. They're just not in the same sections with each other. And by the way, today I found out, not even because I'm in Vilnius, just someone randomly tweeted about it or something. Do you know who Julian Okleppo's stepfather is?
No, no idea.
Tommy Hilfiger.
What?
Yeah. His mom was with an Italian tennis player, had a couple of kids, and then a few years later, I think in 2008, she married Tommy Hilfiger.
That's
a good fun fact if you want to.
That's insane.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll see some sort of Tommy Hilfiger tennis collection eventually emerge if Okleppo emerges as a competitive tennis player more often.
I think I saw Okleppo live a few times, but I never really paid attention to what he was wearing. So maybe I'm going to do that tomorrow. But anyway, who do I think is winning this? I think it's very even. There's a lot of title contenders. The bottom section of the draw in general, like the fourth quarter, looks pretty weak to me. There's no one that can really, like, you know, just instantly. If any of these players get to the semis finals, I'm not confident in them winning. The one with Berankis, which you mentioned, is really strong. It really is. There's Novak Richard in the opening round, which is pretty crazy. Berankis, I think, would have liked his draw from the Venus Open from October back, because if he was in this current form put into that draw, he was probably making like the final quarter semi or something like that. And of course, he lost to Dan Adet in the second round. And here he might not even make the first, make the second round. And that's not going to be because he's weak. I mean, JP like just had a very good run himself. Yeah, it's a very strong section. Struff is definitely a contender for me. I think Virtanen, maybe if he can beat Brouwer, he's also a contender. Rodionov is always has a chance. We sort of discussed that we never see him as a title contender, and yet he still like wins 2 of them a year or something like that. I think I have to go with Stryker. I hate this round one matchup against Delorlo. I mean, I hate it. As in terms of viewing experience, I am so excited for it. Give me that already tomorrow. You know, let's put on one round one match on Monday, and it should be Stryker Delor. But in terms of picking Stryker to win this event and break the top 100 in the meantime, I really don't like the fact that he is playing Delor. But I like how his draw sort of evens out after that. Ilkay, of course, is dangerous, but I think in this draw, Stryker is probably the best player, and that's what I'm going to go with here. I think it's very even, though.
Yeah, I mean, like for me, it's tough because in the third quarter, I see 3 quite potentially strong contenders in Struff, Novak, and Berankis, with the fourth quarter being sort of like this emptier space where I think whoever comes out of the third quarter will beat whoever comes out of the fourth quarter and then make the final. And then on the other hand, we have this Stryker Delor matchup, and Stryker is a contender for sure, but it's hard to pick against somebody who is 14-2 on the season, and it is on the challenger level. but I think I will go with Stricker, just because when you look at all of Delors' wins, it is very impressive, but he doesn't really have a win of that caliber yet. So I think that's why I'm comfortable going with Stricker, and I will match you on that pick.
Stricker did retire in Queen Pair as well, but he wasn't on the Davis Cup team and played doubles. So I'm assuming that he's going to be okay. I don't know. We'll see. But
I also assume that he's fit because of the doubles participation. So yeah, they had other players to put in there if he wasn't fully fit, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Whistler instead of... who did Stricker play with? Maybe with Whistler, but even like Richard or someone would be okay.
Vavrinka? Who did he actually play with?
I'm not actually sure. I'm gonna check it, and you can start talking about Tenerife maybe.
Sure, we can go over to Tenerife, number three this time, a 75-point challenger, and we have Francesco Passaro once again as the top seed.
Played with Vavrinka, you're right. So yeah, it could have easily been Whistler if Stricker wasn't fit. Yeah.
Yeah. Passaro plays a qualifier and then the Rincon or another qualifier. We also have Taberner playing Pablo Llamas Ruiz. Martin Landaluce is here, this time using a junior accelerator spot, not a wild card, and he's facing Santiago Rodriguez Taberna. In the second section, Misolic plays Bonadio, Copayans plays Moreno de Alboran, Maestrelli faces off with Lukasz Rosol, and the winner of that match will play Mager or qualifier. Third section, we have that matchup we mentioned earlier. Raul Brancaccia is the fourth seed playing Jaroslav Demin. Winner will face Michal Kukushkin or Alessandro Giannesi. Oleksiy Krutych plays Stefano Travaglia, who's here with a wild card. I think that's a good first round match. Winner plays Zekic or Gengel. Then we have Shevchenko here as the second seed, surrounded by qualifiers / lucky losers, five of them to be exact, just in a row next to his name. And then we have Peniston and Svacina also in his section. So I think do we only have one, or do we have two lucky losers coming in?
Five, eight. So it's at least two for now, yeah.
Yeah. All right. We can go over to qualifying, where they didn't complete all the matches today, but we already have some of the names that are in the line at the last round. We have Buyun Chaukete against Alejandro Moro Cañas, which will be a great one, and whoever wins that could be dangerous. Both of them dropped just one game against wildcards in the first round. We have Dominguez facing Caruso. We have Shelby, who just defeated Diaz, playing Merida Aguilar. From the matches that are still in the first round, Gigante could emerge. He's the top seed. We also have Alvarez Varona, as you mentioned, could face Damas or Christian Harrison if he beats Gutierrez. We also have Mochizuki and Moroni in qualifying. So some interesting guys, and they actually could win a couple of rounds, especially since they'll be playing each other in that fourth quarter. Over in the doubles, we have Bortolotti and Martos Gornes as the top seeds. Some other interesting teams include Krutych and Marozsán teaming up together. Marozsán, did I miss him? Yeah, Marozsán is just here for doubles. So it seems.
So it's the Hungarian way, apparently, to relax after the Davis Cup.
We have Libietis playing with Margaroli. Brancaccio teams up with Shkugor. Marrero and Mulia back again with a wild card, this time against Bonadio and Travaglia. So we'll see what they do there. We have Andrew Harris teaming up with Christian Harrison, who just won last week.
Father and son duo.
Sorry?
Father and son duo. No, that was a very bad joke, but you know, because Harrison.
I just realized. Shevchenko's playing doubles as well with Bondarevsky. Russo, who's another one of those shady wild cards, he has one in doubles with.
Didn't he play for Haiti though? I think Russo. He did, right? Yeah. So I think he must have changed to the States.
Oh, yeah. So because on this side that I'm on, he's still listed as Haiti. He's playing with Miguel Garcia Jordano, who's a 36-year-old Spaniard. He was one of the wild cards. He lost to Yun Chaoketa in singles qualifying, and then lost to Gigante the week before in singles qualifying. His only previous professional match before that was from 2003, where he lost 6-1-6 Luff in Challenger qualifying. So maybe this guy is a coach or something, or we'll see.
It's like a Marrero.
Anyway, sort of. I would really love to see something done about these wild cards, because it is really just uncomfortable at this point. Like it's just weird.
Yeah, what can you really do though, right? I mean,
yeah, how do you sort of have to.
Yeah.
It's tough to set the line, because there are unranked players theoretically who would deserve a wild card, like juniors or college players who haven't played pro yet or whatever. So it's very hard to sort of define those rules without getting rid of wild cards altogether, which I don't think that would be. I don't know. I can imagine it, but there are beautiful stories that involve wild cards and players getting wild cards towards the end of their careers and stuff. So I don't know. I just don't like seeing these guys in such limited draws getting these wild cards. It's a bit weird to me. But anyway, going back to the singles, who do you think is winning the title in Tenerife?
Yeah, I'll just say that, the sort of resolution that mostly gets proposed is just to remove the wildcard system altogether. But I really wouldn't like that. I just think wildcards make for some such good stories whenever they are actually deserved, whenever someone, you know, Goran Ivanisevic winning Wimbledon 2001. That was something that it's going to be mentioned until the end of days, until someone.
And it's very unique to tennis. It's very much a tennis thing, and I think that's a type of uniqueness that I think would be nice to keep. Yeah. But yeah, we'll see. Who do you think is taking this title here?
Not picking anyone from the qualies, I think. Although Alvarez Varona, Moroccanos, you know, they're dangerous. Even Gigante to an extent, but I'm not that confident in them actually making it. And then of course it's a bit of a toss-up, like where they will get drawn. I don't know if Passaro, you know, he still has another chance for the top 100, and he is up and down on hard courts for sure. I think he fares a lot better against someone like Harris, where he doesn't have to dictate, where he just defends, runs from one corner to another, and then Passaro can actually, his mind is working better on hard courts then if he actually has to think of options to win the point. Even against Harris, though, he had that game when he was just drop-shotting every single shot, and you know he lost it, I think, to get broken for the match. I wonder if Daniel Rinko will do something, because he had a phenomenal January, 14-1, have not watched him in a while, so I'm not sure if he developed anything since then. Oh, by the way, this is totally random, but do you happen to know what Dragos Nicolae Madaras's record is this year?
I'm not sure, but I did see that he was in a final today of like an M25.
Yeah, it's 20-0.
What?
He's won four ITFs in a row. So, you know, soon enough, we're going to see Madaras in some challenges as well, probably. Yeah, Rincon is a big mystery to me right now, because the last time I watched him, which was probably, the middle of 2022, maybe the latter half of 2022, his game was just so pedestrian. His game was so, he just wasn't doing much with the ball. And right now, by the names he's beaten, you know, Shelbaugh, Kravchenko, Damas, Gil, Martin Tifon, Moleker, Fanslow, Vallejo, this is all this year. I'm assuming that he made some progress, but that actually kind of makes me scared of picking Passaro, because I think he can easily lose to someone like Rincon. Taberner, Yamas Ruiz, that's a great first round as well. I don't want to go there. Maybe Landaluce can get a win over Rodriguez Taberna. Misolic was pretty good, but he lost to Moroccanos. Do I trust him to win the event? I don't know. Anyway, the way I'm thinking about this, there's also that fun section, of course, Beniston, Chinasa, Shevchenko at 5 qualifiers. But I think I'm going with Krutik. He really played some excellent tennis this week, lost just to Arnaldi. I think at some points he was just, especially I think since the last few months of 2022, he seems to have made a big jump. I've seen people sort of diminishing his Australian Open run because of the players he beat in the qualifying. Maybe it wasn't the strongest path, but he still played some excellent stuff to get there. Even against Schwartzman, he held up pretty well. Of course, it's a weak version of Schwartzman, but, you know, It's still something for Krutik for sure. And he has done insane progress on hard courts. And I really like his section, not counting Brancaccio, but I doubt Brancaccio is going to go that far again. Or maybe, you know, it could be a pretty good draw for Brancaccio as well. Like if we just sort of flip it and then we have a quarterfinal beating Krutik and Brancaccio, which would be one of the highlights of the event. So anyway, I am going with Oleksiy Krutik.
Yeah, Krutik was probably my second choice when looking at this draw. As you said, worries about Misolic after his loss last week. Rincon, if he's in this type of form, could be dangerous for Passaro. Passaro also didn't look very convincing last week in the first place. Brancaccio with those blisters, I'm not going to pick him. I'm really curious to see if Demin can maybe take advantage of that in the first round. But yeah, Krutik, it's sort of, I'm not sure if I was scared of, but like Travalli, I don't know if he's a comfortable first round completely. And then Brancaccio, if he gets to that point, could be dangerous again. I will be going for Shevchenko. Shevchenko has this fun thing. Obviously, he won Tenerife 1, then inexplicably didn't go to Tenerife 2, but went to Otigné.
That was not the same week. Tenerife.
Oh, man, yeah, you're right.
Went to Otigné, then was supposed to play Tenerife 2, but I think he withdrew.
But yeah, so he is undefeated in Tenerife and winless outside of Tenerife this season, which is fun, and I wanted to continue, and I want to cheer for that continuing of that. As I said, there are some tricky names in qualifying potentially, and he will most likely see them. There's a 5-8 chance that he will come up against whoever is is dangerous in there. But yeah, I'm just going to go for it. Shevchenko for the title here.
I have to worry you a little bit. In 2021, Shevchenko played Tenerife and he beat Mareno Curbelo and Damas before losing to Alice. So he is not undefeated on that island, or even
this season he's undefeated.
This season he is, yes. This season he is. Yeah, Shevchenko is a very serious choice as well. I still don't see his Tenerife 1 run being repeatable. But yeah, in this section of qualifiers, I think if they play, because actually Krutik and Shevchenko were supposed to play in the first round, right? And Shevchenko withdrew. That was in Tenerife 2, I'm pretty sure. Because someone was on Twitter, someone was suggesting that there might not be a handshake. And I know they're like, I don't know if friends, but they definitely have a good relationship. So that wouldn't have been the case. Anyway, if they meet in the semis, I think I'm beating Krutik, but it's definitely somewhat close. Anyway, that's it for today. Thanks for listening again. Of course, thanks for staying until the end if you did. We're going to be back in a week to discuss Vilnius and Tenerife. Hopefully, I'm going to have some additional stuff from the Lithuanian capital for you. I will try my best. See you then.
Bye.